Welcome to Castervis. I'm Christian Corley in my slightly tidier office than it was last week, and he's James McLean. We're kind of doing a kind of a almost like a sequel to last week's podcast, which is unusual because we don't normally do that really.
Sequels require a certain amount of preparation and planning and research rather than sort of coming together.
Yeah, well, we did all of that when we were talking last week in many ways, and in other ways, this is kind of a sequel to last week's podcast, whereby the preparation and research happened in our youth, so in our respective youths. So we posited that whole idea of what happens if there is no Doctor Who TV show last time. I think really it was the aim of last week's discussion, and it turned out to be this very long discussion, which I still haven't edited for public consumption yet. It's only on Patreon at the moment because it was 1 hour 20 plus minutes, so there's going to be a bit of work done there. But the point of that was eventually to get to this notion that there is a chance there may not be a Doctor Who. There probably isn't going to be Doctor Who for a couple of years, I would have thought, in the sense that there's no Doctor Who right now. The production agreement is awaiting the screening of The War Between the Land and the Sea. It takes several months to start a new TV show and finish a TV show and schedule a TV show. So it's unlikely there's not going to be any Doctor Who this year. There's probably not going to be any Doctor Who next year. At the earliest, we're looking at 2027, aren't we? Realistically. And that's possibly optimistic.
It's weird when that sort of period in 86 with the 18 months seemed, you know, that seemed like an eternity.
Yeah.
But then I think this also comes down to what we'll talk about a bit again, which is the lay of the landscape has changed, which I think is something which is always interesting to talk about.
Yes. So we're kind of looking at this time, and you don't need to have listened to last week's, but it does provide a lot of context for what we're going to be talking about today, I suspect. What do we do in a world where there is no Doctor Who on TV as a long-term thing? How does Doctor Who survive that in the modern era, not in 1989 through to 1996 and on to 2005, but now in a completely different world?
Mm.
Now, you might be thinking, crikey, that's why are you doing this, Christian? Don't blame me, it's his idea. but I think it's a really good discussion to be having because, you know, once upon a time, there was a world of comic books and novels. Things have changed quite a bit. I mean, obviously, there was video games back then as well, but Doctor Who and video games is something James and I discuss quite a lot, so we're not going to get into that today for your benefit.
But I think what we're talking about is, as you say, so much of the discourse around Doctor Who, especially from fan content, always 80%, 90% of the time neglects the fact that the circumstances and surroundings of what we're talking about has changed.
Yeah.
And so then compares the previous era and goes, look how things are different, on the assumption that the circumstances are the same and therefore the difference can be quantified by quality of the show or of the people behind it or whatever. And it's like, that's not where we are now. And I think what we're talking about today, while last week we were kind of talking about the show itself, this week we're sort of looking like how does the lay of the land sustain itself compared to how it sustained itself, as you say, in 1989? Can it sustain itself when the terrain is so different? And I think that is quite an interesting conversation to have.
Where do we start with this then? Do we start with like a comparison of that time? I mean, I was looking at something that just popped up in my feed the other day, something, some sort of zombie-based superhero reboot mini series. Mm-hmm. And back then, rebooting anything was a very brave thing to do, whereas now rebooting's kind of baked into a lot of projects and franchises, but it's something the Doctor Who's never done. But other shows do it and other franchises do it a lot. Star Wars has kind of shied away from it, but very much in the comic area of Marvel and DC, Jurassic Park, in a way, that's a reboot. They haven't contradicted anything, but the first movie, the Jurassic World, certainly didn't have any reliance on the earlier movies. And there's other examples of this. So so rebooting's a thing, but it's not really something that's happened with Doctor Who in the past. So where does
rebooting... We're talking about hard rebooting, really, yes, rather than like the soft reboot, which things like Jurassic Park and Doctor Who have done to some degree.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is a bit of a sideways into it, but I don't really, we're in a world where that's kind of acceptable now, whereas 30 years ago, that would be like, oh, this is kind of a bit of a risk and this isn't what people want. But telling stories so in a different... Kind of,
yeah, because we talked about this a little bit last week, didn't we? About, as you say, about would we like a hard reboot of Doctor Who and what would that look like?
Yeah, but I'm thinking more along the lines of how other things have done this and is that something that Doctor Who can do? Because that is, it is now a thing that people do, that people enjoy. People look out for new takes on their favourite franchises or their favourite comic book heroes or whatever.
I think it's an interesting one because I think the first thing one has to do, and this is very difficult, and I have talked this at length with people in a professional capacity. It's like when a reboot is an adaptation. And it's like, again, with adaptation, it's like we kind of what is the heart? What is the spirit of what you're taking and moving on? I think an interesting one to look at is which was a successful hard reboot would be Battlestar Galactica, where you take that original show and you translate it over. And I think the interesting thing with adaptation is that even with scholars, there's this sort of notion of like, what is a good adaptation? You know, this is how you do a good adaptation. It's like, well, what is a good adaptation? You can look at Battlestar Galactica and you can split it down. People who absolutely hated that and did not feel it was authentic to the original. And there were those who thought it was a really interesting adaptation and taking it into a new era. So I suppose with Doctor Who, your first question is like, what do you keep? What do you throw away? And I don't think that's necessarily just down to things like police box and characters, but it's trying to understand what perhaps Doctor Who was. And I think that is probably the big issue. And it's the same issue Batman has, is that whenever you come into Batman, is your Batman. Or as we've said before, whenever you come into Doctor Who is kind of what your benchmark of Doctor Who is. Yeah. So kind of isolating Doctor Who, a 60-year show which has survived because it soft reboots itself so often, how do you sort of decide what are the qualities, ingredients that you pull into your next iteration of it? And I think that's a hard one for Doctor Who, because like Battlestar Galactica was like, it's one season show. If we ignore Battlestar Galactica 1980, which of course we should.
Sure.
So it's nice and easy to some degree distill kind of what Battlestar Galactica is, but a 60 year show, how do you do that? It's especially one which is largely, and as we've said before, an anthology with a common character that runs through it. I don't know. And I think that's the hard thing here. And I suppose you've got to decide who your audience is and then decide kind of what sort of elements of Doctor Who represent that audience, reflect that audience. Are you making it for 14, 15-year-olds? Are you making it for 40-year-olds? Are you doing what I don't think can be done as easily these days, doing it for a broad spectrum audience? And trying to work out kind of what would work, because that's the interesting thing, isn't it? Because when we talked about this last week, is, you know, to me, Doctor Who works at its best as being a sort of anthology where you have one character, a character you like, going into different situations. You're not quite sure what they're going to be each week, and the variety of that keeps it sustainable. Mm. But Doctor Who more in the last 20 years has been more about packages of season-long stories, which are split into chunks of events, which all link together towards an end outcome. And that's different. And more of a modern take. Wednesday has just done that essentially, and it's season two. That is what modern shows are doing. Or does it go incredibly serial like Children of Earth or The Flux, or, you know, you see Alien Earth success, which is kind of that, you know, an 8-part long story. So I suppose that's the question, is what works for it, and also what does your audience want? Because I would like to see a return to that sort of 20th century version. But is there a market for that? Maybe, if it's done in a way which is different, I think possibly. But yeah, that's the hard thing. It's like, what the hell is this show? How do you reboot it? What is its essential elements? Is it, like you said last week, the McGann Bible? Mm. Is it the early McGann Bible? Is it that? Is it about giving it actually a world? Because that's the problem, which we've said about this before in our 15 years of talking with the video games, is the problem with Doctor Who is that there is no real framework outside of a police box and a madman in his box. everything else is everywhere. So how do you create a framework to do that in a video game is very hard. You know, the freedom is, there's nothing there. Role-playing games, almost impossible again, because everyone wants to be a variant of the Doctor and no one wants to be a companion. You know, it's that sort of thing. How do you do that in a world which doesn't really have a framework to create a game or create a world in?
Yeah. If we pull out then, and we take a sort of more holistic view of this, in terms of where other franchises have been resurrected more recently than Doctor Who, Star Wars would seem to be the obvious one to look at, because it kind of tailed off in the mid-80s after the Caravan of Courage, which we were talking about a few minutes ago, and of course at the Droids TV show, etc. It kind of became a bit passé. There was no special editions. The old prints looked absolutely terrible when they were screened on TV, etc., etc., etc. That then slowly came back with a new series of novels, which then had their kind of their crowning glory with the Timothy Zahn trilogy. And then when the video game era came along, you've got Star Wars, which ties back to what we were just saying. Star Wars has done immensely well through video games. Now, it's had graphic novels and miniseries, etc., over the years, but I would say that I think there's a fair argument in favour of a lot of the interest in Star Wars movies from younger generations that didn't see them the first time around, or didn't see the or maybe weren't interested in the prequel trilogy, comes from video games, because it's a vast series of very good video games that don't put you in control of a key character. They'll introduce a new character, or they'll give you control of an army, etc.
But I think another thing that video games can do, which, as you said, books and comics struggle with, is that Star Wars and Doctor Who, to a degree, are very aesthetic mediums in terms of visual and audio. So, you know, you can think of the first Forced Awakens trailer, you know, the roar in cinemas when the Millennium Falcon engines powered through the surround and up into the air.
Yeah.
You can't do that in a comic. You can't do it in a book. And I think, so things like Star Wars, in a weird way, the Timothy Zahn novels were the kind of the peak for the extended in terms of its legacy and memory, even though a lot of people say there's a lot of great stuff that followed, and I'm not saying there isn't. But those first three novels kind of set the tone. But I don't think, in a weird way for me, when I read them back when they came out, I remember them not feeling they captured Star Wars for me. And I think possibly because, as an adaptation, Star Wars, to me, a lot of it is in the sensory stuff. It's not really the world. It's the look. It's the sounds. It's a vibe. It's a mood as much as it is as an actual living place. And I never felt that the books really could capture that very easily. And I certainly think the comics, as with the Doctor Who, struggled. And almost, as we said with Doctor, as you said last week, the Doctor Who comics almost feel like a different universe that exists in its own right, has its own sort of style. And I think the Star Wars ones, certainly the ones in the 80s, where they were whack, to be kind, with some very unusual characters in them, felt like their own space because they couldn't capture those elements of that adaptation. Which video games can? And I think if you look back into the 90s, I know we said we wouldn't talk about video games, but with Star Wars videos like Dark Forces, and, you know, it was the sense of sitting on a PC and hearing and whole, you know, seeing the sort of stormtrooper rifles, or hearing the sounds and they sort of invoked something which the comics and books couldn't do.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think going back to Doctor Who on this, which I think you've got, is a really interesting point. Doctor Who will struggle with that, because Doctor Who has never really managed to do it in that video game world in the same way. It's not something about it. And I think, again, that's because while there are certain sounds attached, you'd think of Doctor Who, the TARDIS, sonic screwdriver, maybe the anthem, the theme, there's not a set aesthetic, there's not a set visual, there's not really a set soundscape to it beyond that. While Star Wars has a very, very specific hook in its soundscape and aesthetic, which is why Andor, I think, did very well, is because it was very keyed in to capturing and evolving those aesthetics in its world building.
I think you're probably right there. I think also that Doctor Who, the more I think about Doctor Who video games, I do think that maybe they just try and do too much and overcomplicate things when it could probably just be a lot simpler and a lot more fun and not be too heavy into things. But, you know, that's another conversation entirely.
But I suppose that again is an audience thing as well, because if you think of Doctor Who as a TV show, certainly in the 20th century, a little bit in the 21st, there is actually quite a lot of detective grounding in it. It's a man who comes into a scene where something's happened. Often someone has died, or, you know, they find a body, or there is a conspiracy which has to be demystified.
Yeah, yeah.
This is going to be one of those really annoying situations where my brain has gone to where my point was. So in terms of video games, you really, to capture Doctor Who, you've got to have something which probably isn't what video games are best suited for. Certainly for popular content, which is something a little more slow paced, something more mystery, something more open field, which is hard to do. While Star Wars, you know, is straight action. I mean, if you look at Star Trek, you'll see a lot of Star Trek fans complain about their video games, because invariably a lot of those video games end up being shooting things.
Yes.
Ships shooting things, phasers shooting things. And they'll be like, but that's not what Star Trek is. I want to go around the galaxy and take diplomats from one place to another and then have some issue. Or, I want to explore a barren, strange new world, and there might be something there that might not. But that doesn't sell content. So again, it comes back to your demographics, doesn't it? And who are you shaping your thing for, and what do they want? And I think Doctor Who is an incredibly complicated one to move to a different medium outside of television, where it's been. And it's even complicated in that space.
Yeah. I was a couple of points on video games again, just related to that. One of the first games I ever played on the Commodore 64 was a Commodore 64 version of Star Trek, the old text input game, where you don't see anything, but you know that there's a Klingon bird of prey nearby, and you have to not be killed or run out of fuel. Another thing, I've just been playing a game called Road Warden on the Nintendo Switch, which is kind of a very slow-paced kind of detective exploration RPG with traditional kind of static graphics, and then you have conversation. So graphics on one side of the screen, conversation on the other side of the screen, explore, etc., etc. It's strangely, I was very quickly drawn into it. And I think with that type of game being very much out of vogue for many, many years, that could be a way in for something like Doctor Who to carry on in a new medium.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think Doctor Who, it's not really been done yet, but Doctor Who would sit very well with a procedural generated game, which there are those out there. There are detective games which try and procedurally generate each time you play.
Right.
Now, if that becomes more sophisticated, that could be something good for Doctor Who. You land and you've got a slightly different thing to deal with each time, which is kind of the same, because Doctor Who, let's face it, does have kind of frameworks to it, but it's slightly different. That might work. I remember thinking back to Star Trek. I remember on the Amiga back in the 90s, for those who don't remember, as I say, realizing getting older and older, there was a massive 16-bit golden age, which followed the 8-bit golden age of the Spectrum and the Commodore, where a lot of the games were initially very much made by artisans in their houses, in their flats, and sold to local high street stores or mail order. In the 90s, the public domain for the Amiga and the Atari was big, and there's lots of discs that you could get of all sorts of things. And I remember one of them was a two-disc Star Trek game, which I think Tobias Richter might have had some involvement in. I can't remember now. He certainly was doing a lot of what, again, you could buy on PD, public domain discs of like 3D models of the Enterprise and stuff, which he was doing that were animated. And he now does stuff for some of the video games for Star Trek now. He's doing models for them. So it's interesting how, again, that's led careers.
Yeah.
But they had a Star Trek game there, and it was quite simple, but it was quite pretty for 16-bit. And it was, again, it was just done by an amateur, and you would go to different places, walk to different places and deliver stuff or send people, and there'd be occasional things which you might have to shoot. But in a lot of ways, it felt far more like Star Trek than a lot of the Star Trek sort of bridge commanders and Star Trek Online and the stuff that you get these days, because it sat to those values. But would that bring in a market? Probably not, because people get bored with it very quickly. So again, that's where I think the video, in a weird way, if we're almost like firing off here books and graphic novels compared to video games, where video games can aesthetically recreate the world well. They can't do it in an often an authentic way that books and graphic novels kind of can in a way, but then the books and novels don't really feel quite that. So I think the interesting one that we probably need to address here is the audiobook, because that's obviously extremely important to Doctor Who, and it's an interesting middle ground.
Yes, well, that is exactly what I was going to come on to next, because we've had Big Finish since the late 90s, and I think 99-ish, 98, 99, and in their time with Doctor Who, they've sort of increased their output considerably. Now, one would imagine that in a world where there is no Doctor Who, initially, they might have like a bit of a boost, but at some point, depending on how long there's no Doctor Who on television, there's going to be an element of Big Finish kind of easing off, say, their satellite stuff and focusing more on a Doctor. Now, given audiobooks are expensive compared with a lot of other produce, it's not the word I'm looking for, items that we purchase, commodities, etc., consumables, compared with podcasts, one of the things in my head was Big Finish switching to sponsored podcasts or subscription podcasts of their actual dramas.
So you mean, are we to like fiction podcasts?
Yes.
Like dramatic podcasts?
Yes, dramatic podcasts. Yeah. Because that's a growing area of podcasting, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing.
I agree. Yeah, I think the problem for Big Finish as well is, and I don't know this, and obviously we see them trying to tap the new series quite frequently these days with, and successfully pulling in lead voices and people to write for it. But is the audiobook demographic, where does that sit? And does it sit with the audience that needs to sustain it? Because I don't doubt, even though if you think back to 89, you've potentially got Doctor Who fans who are in their 40s, 50s even. Even, I think that's a crazy thing to say, but, you know, dedicated Doctor Who fans. So when you suddenly get a plethora of books and then eventually audiobooks, you've got a base which kind of resonates with them. But if your younger audiences are now more into, as you say, sort of easy listening podcasts, shorter term content, as well as a saturation of content as well, what are the mediums which could sustain that in that show without it dying off? I think that's what I think is interesting. So people who watch, I mean, let's say, for instance, I was what in 89, like 12, whatever, and Sylvester McCoy went off the air, and there was books that I could read, which were kind of aimed at me and a slightly older than the adventure stuff. Eventually, there was videos I could afford if I was inclined. Showtime, there was all the Probe, there was all the unofficial dramatizations which sat around Doctor Who, which would eventually kind of evolve into sort of where Big Finish is, or would be. But where's that market now? And who is that market to keep that image? Because you want those younger people should be the ones to sustain it. Because, you know, we're going to die off.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they're the ones to perpetuate the legacy. How do you perpetuate the legacy with them? Because they care about it. There's a lot of people who, young people who love Jodie Whittaker, who loved Shooty, who love the back catalogue as well. They exist. It's not saying, and they're hardcore as well. But how do you make sure that they don't deviate onto other stuff?
I do think it's podcasts. I think it's a podcast, 25-minute episodic podcast. Listen on the way to work, listen on the way home from work, whatever. You also don't need your crew, you don't need your set, you don't need to get an actor on the set at a particular time or a location or whatever with the taxi driver and all that business. They can, as we saw during the lockdown years, they can even record their parts at home if necessary. I honestly think podcasts are the way to prolong, shall we say, Doctor Who in a, not just Doctor Who, but particularly for what we're talking about now, Doctor Who in a post-TV era. I think they are the modern take on the novels. So that's the end of this part of the discussion. We're going to be carrying it on next week. If you're on our Patreon, you've already heard all of this in its entire form. So, you know, if you want to get our podcasts early, ad-free, and with extra material, do sign up at patreon.com/castDerberus. As I say, we'll be continuing this next week. But what we really want is your thoughts and your ideas and your opinions and your insights and your feelings about what's going on with Doctor Who and where it can go next in this very challenging, competitive televisual environment. As I say, James and I will continue the discussion next week, but get those ideas over to us because we want to bring you into this podcast discussion later on. We'll be back next week. Until then, it's goodbye.